standing there at the edge of the precipice as he was looking down, watching that small trail of dust just keep floating up. And all through the area, what he could see was little trails of dust. Today was going to be different. Today was a day that he had been waiting for and waiting and waiting. Because today, they will know. Today, they will see. Unlike they had ever seen before. The dust trail slowly making their way. And he thought about what was going to transpire that day. It was going to be a surprise. I'm sure they were not anticipating what was going to take place today. And he just wondered, did they have any idea, did they have any clue, any recognition of how monumental this was going to be in the life of the nation? That's what he was thinking. Elijah, standing there watching the entire nation of Israel as he has commanded Ahab to bring the people together there on the mountaintop, there on Mount Carmel. And along with the prophets of Baal and the prophets of the, what was it again?
Asherah.
Thank you, Roger. Asherah and Baal. The male, Baal. Asherah, the female. Pretty much like a cult, that of a sex cult. Because the nation had so given themselves over to idolatry that back in chapter 17, here of 1 Kings, Elijah had said that there wouldn't be any more rain except by his word. Who would pray something like that? Who would declare something like that? Do you know the fallout of what that's going to be in the lives of the people? In the lives of the people that he cared for. And yet he was willing to state something like that, either by God's command or from some innate desire that he has, that things have to change, right? Things have to change. People are moving away, and the prophets of Baal and the people that are worshiping Baal are getting more and more entrenched in the nation. Something has to give. And Elijah was willing to say a prayer like that. That for 3.5 years, the sky overhead would be bronze. Would be dust that so tore up the land that every day the people ate a little bit more dust each and every day. And that trail that they were making to the top of Mount Carmel that day, they coughed and they choked and they sputtered on that dust that they've been eating for 3.5 years. All because of why? Because his message was a turn or burn message. Either turn back to Jehovah God or the land will burn as a result of it. And it had, hadn't it?
That's right.
The land burned. Scorched. Because God withheld that rain from that people. That people that should have known better. A people that should have known that you turn away from God, there's going to be consequences. And yet, the political system, Ahab and Jezebel, had so corrupted the land that they just dug their heels in more, right? No, we're not going to do that. Baal, Baal, Baal is going to save us. And the people suffered. And that's helpful politics, right? That's usually how that happens, isn't it? Is that if you're not going to turn back to God, there's going to be consequences in every nation, in every people that do not turn their hearts back to God. And here on this day, Elijah was certain that this was going to change things. It was all going to be something that they would witness in their day with their own eyes. Let's go ahead and get into the text, if you will. Turn with me to 1 Kings chapter 18. First verse, and it happened after many days, 3.5 years, that the word of the Lord came to Elijah, saying, go present yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the land. It's good news, isn't it? Rain is coming back to the land. The Lord decrees it. And yet something has to take place before that happens. Let's ask this question. Should God bless this unrepentant, unregenerate group of people with rain? I don't think so. Right? Why should this group of people get rain now? Something has to change. Something has to take place if rain is going to happen for this group of people. Because there was no turning, was there? So either one of two things happened. Either God has something in mind or his plan failed. Right? I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that his plan failed. They said, 3.5 years, they just waited me out. No. There's something more going on behind the scenes here, isn't there? And so we jump over some of what's taking place here. And let's go ahead and get down here into verse 18. Elijah says to him, after Ahab says, "Is that you, you troubler of Israel?" Elijah has been, for 3.5 years, public enemy number one. Right? It's whose fault? It's Elijah's fault. It's all Elijah's fault. If he hadn't have said that, then we wouldn't have had any of this trouble. Despite the fact that they didn't turn back to God, right? That's not really included in any equation. And so Elijah calls him on the carpet and he says about him, "I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house, and that you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and that you have followed after the Baals." End of discussion. It's your fault. You're the reason that all of this is taking place. And so, obviously, God should have just went ahead and got rid of Ahab and Jezebel. That would have been my answer, right? That's what I would have said. Let's just get rid of them. And I think it's a good precedent. Because when God says, let's get rid of all the politicians, I think, oh, isn't that a great, swell idea? I don't have any relatives that are politicians. You may, so that may not be as prudent for your thought of it, right? But God doesn't work in that formula, that manner. And so he says here, verse 19, "Therefore send, gather to me all Israel to Mount Carmel, 450 of the prophets of Baal, 400 of the prophets of Asherah, who sit at Jezebel's table." And so Ahab says, okay, okay. He's stuck over a fence, isn't he? I mean, he cannot fix the situation. It's already been told to him, and he's a firm believer that unless Elijah says there's going to be rain, there's not going to be any rain. He's a firm believer of that because Baal has not proved to be able to solve the problem. And so he knows. So at this point in time, what's going through Ahab's mind? Okay, we'll get everybody up there. He'll pray for rain. The rain will come, and this will all be over with. You just think about that. What is going through Ahab's mind at this point in time when Elijah says, take them all up to the top? Do you think he has any idea what's going to happen once he gets up there? Not a clue. Not a clue what's going to take place up there. He thinks, this is going to be easy. But he can't kill him, right? Can't kill Elijah. He would just love to just put a spear right through him right now. Just say, hey, kill him. But why can't he do that? By Elijah's word, right? It's going to be by Elijah's word whether there's going to be any rain or not. So until the rain comes, until there's going to be rain, Elijah is safe, right? Elijah is calling the shots. Elijah can do whatever he wants to do until we get what we want, right? We want the rain. Until then, Elijah is safe. So Ahab, he gets all the sons of Israel gathered the prophets together at Mount Carmel. They're all up there. Okay, we're here. What next, Elijah? You're in charge. You're the big man of the show. What's going to happen now? So Elijah says. And he looks at Elijah and he just passes him right by. And he goes over to the people. The people that have gathered. The people who have been the ones suffering because of Ahab and Jezebel's stubbornness. Because it's always the people that suffer, isn't it? And so he looks at the people and he says, how long? Oh, it's been long. It's been 3.5 years. It's been long that we've been suffering. It's been long that we have been waiting for relief, for help, for something. It's a long time we've been waiting. 3.5 years. That's how long this sermon's going to be. It could be, right?
Feels like it.
Feels like it. Amen, bro. You just wait. So, here he says, how long? How long will you keep limping? Other translations say haltering. Other translations say faltering. It's all that same idea. Wishy-washy, right? Standing between the two. Because you've got Baal on one side. And it's not that they're really that attracted to what Baal provides, right? Now, Baal does provide in the sense of the cult that goes along with it, this idea of fertility cult associated with sexual prostitution and all that accompanies that, right? So that of the things of the flesh, but it's not giving those things that are needed most, and that is the rain. But why is Baal so popular at this point in time? Because it's state-sponsored religion, right? Ahab and Jezebel can make it awful rough on anybody that wants to stand up. So rough that they've been doing what? Killing off the prophets of Jehovah. It isn't a really safe idea to stand up and defend Jehovah God at this point in time in history. What about now? Is that safe? I'm not getting killed for it.
might get massacred on social media or whatever, but it's a different time, isn't it? It's a different era. That standing up for God is a life and death situation. I think we have a hard time connecting to that idea. Because I'm so chicken, I get afraid of what people think about me. I get afraid that people are going to get upset that I'm going to say something offensive. And yet here in this day and this time, it was life or death. Elijah says, how long are you going to limp between these two? Between that of Baal or Jehovah God? If the Lord is God, follow Him. If Baal is, then follow Him. And all the people say, they didn't say anything. Did not say a word. Why didn't they say anything? The text doesn't say, but guess who's watching? You know who's watching. Who's looking? They have all the prophets of Baal. And what are they doing? They've got their notebooks ready. They're ready. You going to say something about Jehovah God? I'm ready to take your name down. We get down on this mountain, it's not going to be good for you. But the people are without a voice at that point in time. Nothing is said. No word is spoken on behalf of Jehovah God at that point. Wasn't that a defining moment? Couldn't that have been a real defining moment at that point in time? Either choose God or choose Baal. And the people don't say a word. The people do not say a word. I think that is so instructive. Would we be different? Would I be different? I want to say yes. Oh, we would all be different than that. But I'm not living in a life and death situation. Probably more chicken-hearted than I know. Right? Probably more thinking about who's going to take care of the people that I love and care for. It's easy to criticize them, at least from this end, for me. And yet it was a tough, difficult stretch of time period, wasn't it? Of suffering over and over again, eating the dust day in and day out, and knowing we're stuck. We're just stuck. So, Elijah says, I only am left a prophet of the Lord, but the prophets of Baal, look at them over there, there's 400 of the prophets of them, and then 450 of the prophets of Asherah. Well, I got that wrong. There we have 450 men, the prophets of Asherah, 400, right? 850. All on the public dime. All sitting at Jezebel's table. All eating high on the hog. They're not having to go out and eat the dust. They're all what? State-sponsored religion. They've got it made. You follow the state line, and oh, life is easy for you. It's easy to follow that path. So, Elijah says to the people, he doesn't say this to the prophets of Baal, he doesn't say this to Ahab, he says, let them therefore give us two bulls and let them choose one for themselves and cut it in pieces, lay it on the wood and put no fire under it, and I will prepare the other bull and lay on the wood and put no fire under it. You mean a contest? Wow! It's going to be a contest? And the prophets of Baal and Asherah over there looking like what? Nobody said this was going to be a contest. Nobody told us that that was going to take place up here. And they're all sitting here, we don't want to do that. We do not want to do that. And what's the people say? Well, I'm skipping down here. Verse 24, you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord, and the God who answers by fire, He will be God. And the people said, it's well said. The God who answers by fire in the middle of a drought. We don't need more fire. We need water. That's not really important because Baal hasn't been able to provide water at all up until this point in time. So maybe we do the fire God and let Him produce fire. Because apparently He's not very good at producing water. Right? Baal, the God of the sun. So the people said, that's well said. Let's do that. It's a contest. And they're over there looking at each other. Did you know this? How did this get so turned around on us? But there they are, 450 of one and 400 of the other. And so they start scrambling. Right? We've got to make this happen. We're going to do this. And so Elijah says, choose a bull for yourself. Whichever one you want to pick, it doesn't really bother me. And prepare it first. You're the majority. And so since you're the majority, then we're going to let you call into the name of your God. But don't put any fire underneath it. And the guy says, I knew I should have brought that extra, flint or whatever it was. But there wasn't any chance to prepare ahead of time. There wasn't any chance to get sneaky or to do any sort of sly trickery. Because those guys are kind of good at that. That's why they called them magicians and all that sort of stuff back in Egypt, right? They were able to do sort of things a little connivingly. But guess what? It was a contest that was a surprise. And they left all their props back home. If I'd known that, I would have brought some of that. Did you know that was going to happen? No, I didn't know. And so here they are, stuck in a contest they didn't really want. But now, it's all about proof, right? It's all about making sure that the right optics get seen. Making sure that all of this gets done up and right, and because everybody's watching, right? Because we act differently, and religion looks a little bit differently when everybody's watching. And that's what's going to take place here, isn't it? So the bull they was given, then they prepared it, called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, about 3 hours. 3 hours. Baal! 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 Don't you just feel like you just are right in the throes of it, you know? Oh, Baal, hear us. Over and over, the chanting gets going, you know. 3 hours of that. And you're thinking, man, I thought this would have been over with by now, right? And Elijah just lets them keep going. And it came about noon, Elijah mocked him. Sarcasm, right? Sarcasm is a real powerful tool. Because all of us love to have sarcasm. You know, about fifth grade, when kids catch on to sarcasm, you think, man, that's really neat. Until they start using it on you. You find out, why did we let them learn that to begin with? But sarcasm. So he mocks them. He says, cry louder. He is a god, isn't he? Maybe he's thinking about it. Maybe he's busy. Maybe he's on a trip. Perhaps he's sleeping. Perhaps he has to be woke up. Did your god not leave you an itinerary of where he was going to be? Sarcasm. For whose benefit? Not really for the prophets, was it? They weren't really paying that much attention. They're still over there just crying out, oh, Baal, oh, Baal. Oh. It's for the people that were needed to hear that. The people that needed to start thinking about, why isn't he answering? Is there some reason that can be explained? Is he not there? Or is he a god at all? That's the real question, isn't it? He doesn't use that at this point in time. So, it stirred them up, though. They get wound up. They cry louder. And then they start to cut themselves. Oh, bloody mess, right? It's just going to be awful. Here they are, going and, you know, cutting themselves with knives, with spears and swords. The gush of the blood coming out. The mountain is starting to look a little bit ugly at this point in time. 400 of one and 450 of the others. All dancing around, looking like idiots, right? Crying out, oh, Baal, save us. Oh, Baal, you know, bring fire. All of this going on as the people watch. And when midday was passed, and they prophesied into the offering up to the offering, but there was no voice, no answer, no response. You're just shocked, right? You're just shocked that nothing was going to happen. You knew it was going to go down like this. You knew that Baal didn't have any power. Did the people? Well, they knew that up until this point in time, Baal had not provided water. I don't think it's any surprise. I don't think that they were shocked that there wasn't an answer. Because it's more of the same, isn't it? It's not that there's great belief in Baal. It's that the political machinery and force had silenced a group of people that should have stood up and done better. Isn't that sometimes the more powerful thing? Not that you get them to disbelieve, but you just get them to shut up. And as long as they're not talking about it, as long as they're not expressing it, then it's just as good as if it doesn't exist. Would Christianity fit in that boat today? That's not that you got to try to prove it wrong. All you got to do is silence it. And it's just as ineffective. Right? Just as ineffective. And here this group of people stand, watching all of it. They didn't say anything previously, and here they are watching this show, all the while silent. Because the political machinery has silenced them and kept their voice from declaring what they should know and declare to be true. I think that says a lot. So Elijah, he's had enough of it. He says, come near to me. And all the people came near to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord that had been torn down. Says something right there, doesn't it? Returning back to God begins, I think, not only metaphorically, but in many ways, that of repairing broken altars. Altar, a place of sacrifice, an altar, a place of prayer. If you want a good Bible study that's connected to this, read about and think about the prayers that Elijah prayed. numerous prayers that he prays. He prays for no rain. He prays for the child of the widow of Zarephath. He prays over and over again, and to see the demonstration of those prayers. Of course, we have one in our text that we're going to be looking at here in just a few moments. But he begins to put that altar back together. And notice what he does here in the divided kingdom, what he chooses to do. He takes 12 stones. A divided kingdom does not reflect God's truth. They may have been divided, but it was the nation of Israel as God had put it together. The tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord saying, Israel shall be your name.
So, sacrifice is going to be for, not before, but be on behalf of the entire nation. A special sacrifice is going to be done here. Because we asked the question before, should God bring rain to this group of people? This unrepentant group of people? I don't know, the old trite saying, can God bless a mess? They're in a mess, right? Is God going to bless that mess and say, well, you know, it didn't work out this time. Better luck next time. Maybe I'll get them to do a little better next time. No, there's something significant about this sacrifice for and on behalf of the entire nation here. So he built it back together. Built the stones of the altar in the name of the Lord. He built a trench around the altar large enough to contain 2 seahs of seed. Arranged the wood, cut the bullock in pieces, laid it on the wood. And he said, now, fill 4 jars with water and pour it on the burnt offerings and all the wood. In the middle of a drought, he's wasting water, right? In the middle of the drought, somehow, they got water up that mountaintop, and they're going to pour that water. I mean, everybody's thirsty, right? Pour this water on this sacrifice. And yet, water is a necessary ingredient of what's going to take place in this action, isn't it? Sacrifice and water on the behalf of the people. I think there's a lot of symbolism to a lot of that, as we think about that. So he says, do it once, do it a second time. Do it a third time, and they did it a third time. So much so that the water is now filling up the trench. And the guys that's been carrying the water say, is that enough? You know, we're wore out. That's a lot of water. That's a lot of water to carry up on a mountaintop, right? So it happened at the time of the offering, and Elijah the prophet came near and said, here's his prayer, right? Lord, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, of Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel. Identity. People have forgotten, right? They've forgotten the identity of who God is historically, of what group of people they're connected to, Israel. And he says to them, says again, that I am your servant, and that I have done all these things at your word. Hear me, Lord, or hear me, that this people may know that you are Lord. That's what he was thinking as he is looking over the precipice at that people coming up. What did he want them to know? He wanted them to know who the Lord God was. Because if they knew, they should have done better. If they knew, they should have been living and acting differently. But apparently they'd forgotten some things. And they needed reminded of that. So, that you may know that the Lord, you are God, and that you have turned their heart back again. And fire consumed. Consuming fire that so comes down and takes away the breath of everyone there. I'm trying to paint a picture here that I think is difficult for us to understand how significant that fire coming down from heaven. Would you want to have been close? I wouldn't want to have been close. And everybody standing around does what? Let's all do it together. You missed it. You could have had it, right? You could have been there, but you missed it. That's significant though, isn't it? Of what takes place? The fire fell, consumed the burnt offering, the wood, the stones, the dust, licked up the water in the trench. What would that have been look like? What would that have been to have seen that? And every eye, and some guy in the back saying, what happened? I missed it. I was tying my shoe, right? Everybody saw, except that guy, right? Everybody saw with their eyes, heard with their ears, that consuming fire. Not just lightning, not just something that's just, you know. It did what? It consumed. The God who in the New Testament is called a consuming fire, he consumed all of that sacrifice. A consumption of fire that should have been focused on who? The sinners on that mountaintop. That's where that consuming fire should have been directed toward. But our Lord in His graciousness directed that consuming fire to a substitute, a sacrifice that was made for the people, for the people there. Then they're acceptable for what? For blessings. God had to intervene because the people's unrepentant attitude did not allow God to bless them again. The drought would have continued on forever if God had not intervened, had not brought sacrifice and allowed sacrifice to happen for this people. And in so doing, He demonstrated His power and His presence to that people to remind them of who they served. Somehow they had forgotten that power that was more powerful than all the politicians that they were bowing down to all the false prophets that was surrounding those prophets, that Baal and that Asherah. They had forgotten that power. They had forgotten that God's presence is greater than any fear of death, a fear of being silenced. They had forgotten. And Elijah says, that they may know. There's your mountaintop experience. Knowing God on the mountaintop. Being reminded of who He was. Now, the rest of it talks about the fallout from that event. Right? So, join with me. Elijah says, seize the prophets of Baal. And you thought their eyes were big when they talked about the contest. Now, look at their eyes now. They know things have not gone well for them. They know not only is the contest over, but they have lost. Not just lost the contest with Baal. They have lost the contest of silencing the people, of Baal remaining in power. They have lost that contest as well. Seize the prophets of Baal. Don't let one of them escape. Seize them, and Elijah brought them down to the Wadi Kishon and killed them there. Apparently that sacrifice did not apply to the prophets, to the enemies of God. I think that's significant, isn't it? The people were spared. But the prophets, the enemies of God, they were not spared. That sacrifice did not allow them to live. It wasn't a consuming fire, but it was the vengeance of what the people knew to be right. That should have taken place earlier, right? That the prophets of Baal should have been silenced way before now. They shouldn't have allowed to have a foothold, an entrance, anywhere close to the nation. And yet, it slowly crept in, didn't it? And slowly, the prophets of Baal had taken over the nation to the point that talk and standing up for Jehovah God was not allowed. Interesting patterns, isn't it? As you think through Old Testament history and what reoccurs throughout time, of the silencing that it takes when the people that should stand up no longer do. It's a challenging thought to think about. So, as we notice, Elijah says to Ahab, get up, eat and drink, for there is the sound of heavy rain. Blessings will return. Came at a pretty high cost, didn't it? 3.5 years of dust, 3.5 years of the land suffering. But now there has been a change. There's been a change. Blessings have returned because of the sacrifice, because of what's transpired. So, as I finally now get to my notes and we get to start working on those, 9 pages worth. You act shocked. Okay. Some takeaways that I want us to think about before we leave here tonight. The mountaintop view that we have on this pinnacle that we're looking at, let's look through these three significant groups here. We've got Ahab, and we're going to clump together Ahab and Jezebel. Because we know Jezebel is a great influence that's going to continue on. Because as Elijah leaves that mountain, head held high, running down that mountain, beating him down to the bottom, right? Then he gets to Jezebel, and that smile disappears, right? And now he has to face that apparently not everything has changed. Because that was his hope, wasn't it? Things are going to change. Why else pray a prayer
that's going to bring about 3.5 years of suffering of the people. Who's brave enough to pray a prayer like that? I don't know if I'm willing to pray a prayer to say, Lord, whatever it takes, bring about change in the people. But don't hurt my 401k, right? Don't make me have to suffer. Lord, I don't want to taste the dust. I don't want to have to face the consequences of a prayer that says, Lord, whatever it takes to bring people back to you, I'm willing to suffer along with. I don't know if I'm that brave. And when I'm not that brave, guess what? Christianity gets silenced all the more.
That's right.
All the more. Because who's in the way? I'm in the way because I want God to take action. Then I turn around and tie his hands behind his back when I say, Lord, bring about change, but don't make it affect me. Don't make it affect the people that I love and care for. Don't make it affect my kids because I want my kids to have a good life. According to what? What's a good life? Living amongst sinful people with having all sorts of physical blessings? Is that a blessed life? Sorry, I'm getting a little too pointed there, I know. But isn't that a scary thought? The nation, politically, as Elijah looks at it, what has changed? They're still on the throne. Worship to Jehovah God is still outlawed. I understand that there is a little change in what's taking place with some of that power there. But worship to Baal certainly took a hit. But surely there's going to be some new spin on the television set that's going to spin this in their favor. Always does, right? There's some guy already back at the throne room. He's already typing up saying, oh, we're going to spin this. It's going to look good. We're going to say, if it wasn't for the fact that Baal had already primed the pump, then Jehovah God wouldn't have had a chance to even make any sort of appearance. You know? And we knew the water was eventually going to come. You know, they're just going to try to spin it. But the prophets of Baal dead, and it's unlikely that any are going to want to step back into their shoes without there being some sort of pressure by the queen. Right? Who's going to want to sign up and say, oh, we got job openings for prophets of Baal right now? Who wants to sign up for that? Right? Not really much of a job opportunity at that point in time. But it'll get spun. They'll say, guess what? We got new hires and we're going to give you extra bonuses and give you all these other sorts of things because guess what? Evil work always finds those that are willing to participate. But it would seem that little has changed politically, in the sense of the direction of the nation. Let's look at Elijah as we see him. We have God's hero, God's spokesman, there on that mountaintop right there. And after he has shown the presence and the power of God there on that mountain, what does he see that's any different now than when he started 3.5 years ago? The people saw. The people gasped. We killed a bunch of prophets, and then everybody comes off the mountain, and there's been rain. What's changed? I think there's a problem for God's man right now, because I think his expectation and his reality do not meet up. Right? What's expected for God's spokesman, and what has happened, because he prayed because he wanted what? Change. He wanted there to be a change. I think sometimes we get boxed into that same formula, that our expectation and our reality sometimes don't meet. That we want great change to happen, and we want great things to happen to bring about that change. It didn't happen in Elijah's day, did it? Elijah came off that mountain, not as psyched up as you would have thought he'd been, right? You know what he saw? You know what everybody saw? That's going to be the talk for months. But it didn't have the lasting power, did it? And for Elijah, he came off that mountain disappointed and discouraged. And it's going to take God sending him to a second mountain, Mount Horeb, before he finally gets Elijah straightened out. If you have a chance, you know, I got a two for you. I got two mountains. You want to take the second mountain tonight too? Oh, I'm glad you said yes. Very good. Let's go into that one. But it's a second mountain where Elijah gains the perspective that he didn't have on the first one, because he thought, this is going to change everything. But it's often not those big, bold, impressive events that bring about changes in people. Now this was needed, wasn't it? There was a change that needed to take place. But the big change needed to take place in that third group, in the hearts of the people. In the hearts of the people that had been silenced, that didn't stand up for what was right. And yes, there was a lot that had died. But the truth of the matter If you die for the sake of serving and defending God, that martyr's death speaks more volumes, doesn't it? It speaks a great deal more than what any sort of silence and cowering say. Well, we'll just live for God here in the quiet. Living for God in the quiet brought about drought, destruction, suffering, and yet the people, they suffered in silence, didn't they? Not too big a picture there, is it? So for the people, the rain has come. The substitutionary sacrifice that was made on the mountain for their behalf, because they should have received the punishment, has been a blessing to them. They received rain, they received the blessing of having that sacrifice made for them. God intervened for their sake. Ahab and Jezebel's? No. The prophets of Baal? No. Elijah's? No. Elijah kept waiting. It was the people's sake. God intervened for them. And God always intervenes for people, right? Because we cannot save ourselves from our own destruction. We can't save ourselves from that. God always intervenes. And just as you know that picture all so well as I do, it takes substitution. And that substitution took place for us on the cross. Where sacrifice, where water and blood meet. Oh, what a picture that that mountaintop paints when we put it through the lens of the New Testament cross. And Elijah was certain that day was going to change everything. And there is a day that was changing everything, but Elijah wasn't the man that was going to be providing that, was it? But the people needed that sacrifice just as much as we need that sacrifice. That fire that consumed is the fire that we understand is the God that we serve. So, the opportunity was made available to the people to speak, to stand up for the Jehovah God that they should have been serving loudly, proudly, in all aspects of their life this whole time. But it had been slowly silenced into nothingness. Practical applications? I think they're obvious. What day and times do we live in? Are we loud and confident about standing for and proclaiming the Lord God Jehovah? Or have we been silenced ever so slowly? Of a list that begins to get longer and longer that you cannot talk about or use these phrases or speak about in these places. Interesting list, isn't it? I didn't make the list. I didn't choose the list. Of things that we have to declare to a world, these are wrong. Well, who are you to say it's wrong? It's not me. It's the God whom I serve. It says that it's wrong. And I don't get to make the rules, right? So, politics don't save. They didn't save in Elijah's time. So neither they nor should they have that have hindered their faith. Should it have? That politics should have hindered them from speaking up? Shouldn't have hindered them. We need to recognize that Elijah, the hero, leaves the mountain. Because we don't live on mountaintop experiences. It's in the small, sometimes insignificant, day-to-day standing for and declaring whom we serve to the people around us. What's the takeaway from this? I know a lot of you are already making that declaration around you. And what I want to say to you is, keep it up. Keep going. Keep standing together with our brothers and sisters, reminding ourselves that we're not going to be silenced. But we worry, because I see a lot of us with receding hairlines. Randy, give him a show. No. And so you see that this graying, we worry about what? What's that next generation going to face? What are you willing to pray for this next generation? I don't know that I'm brave enough, because I've got some in that. And I worry. I worry about them. What are they going to face? I don't know what they're going to face. All I know is I want them to be brave. I want them to stand even when the odds are stacked against them. Because I've often heard us want to say, oh, I want them to have it better than me. No, I don't necessarily want it to be better. I want them to be stronger, braver, more stalwart in their faith in God to be able to stand up to whatever is going to happen in our nation. Am I brave enough to pray that? If that means that they're going to have to suffer, I want to be brave enough for that. I want to be brave enough to say, Lord, I'm willing to take that on. That I'm willing to face those difficult times if it means that they're going to be better off for that, and our nation and the people that I love and the people I rub shoulders with in the world are going to come to know you. I want to be that brave. I hope we're all that brave. I just don't know that we're there yet. Why do I say that? Because I think we're getting a little quieter in the world. I just get that hint. We're a little quieter. We're a little more hesitant. We're a little more afraid of what people say and what people think. And it's easy to be brave here. I understand. But this is the easy place to be brave. Mountaintops are great to shout off of and to shout loud and proud, right? But it's down where we live that we got to say those things. So tonight, I'm wanting us to be braver. I'm wanting us to be like Elijah, that's willing to say, it's going to make a difference. This prayer, this activity, because if it's between that of turning to the Lord or facing the consequences, how else are they going to learn the consequences? How else will they learn the consequences? If God doesn't withhold blessings, how will they know? Am I ready to face the withholding of God's blessings? Still want my hot showers. Talked about that to leave, haven't we? I can live with a lot, but I don't want to give up my hot showers. I don't want to give up all the benefits that come from living in an affluent world. I don't want the thought of coming to church and having to sit next to sweaty people without the air conditioner, but you know, I know those all sound silly. But what can you imagine that God can do to turn people back to Him? He can do an awful lot. But am I willing to face that without tying God's hands and saying, God, whatever it takes, and I mean it. That gives God a lot of free rein in my world and in my life. And I don't know that I'm ready for that. Let's try to get there. Let's try to be that people that walk off the mountaintop better for it because of how we live day to day, knowing the God that we serve. Tonight, I don't know that we're asking for anybody to be baptized tonight. If you want to be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, we want to encourage that, that you know what you need to do. But what I hope that we'll walk out of here as we encourage one another is to maybe say a word to each other. And here's what I would like to say to each other. I know it'll sound corny. To look at each other as we walk out and say, be brave, and I'll try to be brave too. I know that sounds corny. I know it. And if you don't do it tonight, you can say, well, that's because I'm not going to do things because Brent's just corny and I'm not going to do what he says. I understand. It's corny. But what are we going to say to each other and to help each other be braver than we've ever been before? I don't know that I've said that to anybody before. Be brave. Be brave in your faith. Braver than you've ever been. I've never said that to anybody in my life. But I'd like to tonight. I'd like to say that to each and every one of us. Be braver. And if you ask and say to each other tonight, I hope I'll be braver tomorrow. I'll be so brave, Kim won't be able to stand. Right? She'll say he can't get his head through the door. He's so brave today. But a little thing, isn't it? But that's where my confidence and my assurance comes from. Is that the God that I serve and the people that I get to serve Him with. And thank you for being those people. Because you have influenced my life and have helped me so much. And maybe us saying those silly little words to each other tonight will help us more than we know. Let's sing a song to encourage one another while we stand up.